I am a dancer. An international dancer. No, write down an American dancer. As the poetry of Walt Whitman springs from the womb of America, so has my dance its origin in the very life source of my country.
You're listening to the voice of Sidney Smith in Isadora Duncan, Triumph, Tragedy, Triumph by Walter Sorrell. A page from this Sunday's edition of Anthology. This is Fleetwood. Each Sunday at this time, WRCA, in cooperation with the Poetry Center of the YM and YWHA, 92nd Street and Lexington Avenue in Manhattan, brings you Anthology, a selection of readings from poets, past and present, and the music to accompany their poetry. This evening, Poetry and the Dance. Our guests, Walter Sorrell, Sidney Smith, and Howard Reed. There has always been a very close relationship between poetry and the dance. And during the course of the next 30 minutes, we're going to illustrate that statement not only with some very beautiful poems dedicated to dancing, but with the first performance of a verse narrative for radio, Isadora Duncan, Triumph, Tragedy, Triumph, which was written by our special guest, Walter Sorrell. Mr. Sorrell, author of the book, The Dance Has Many Faces, is also a contributing editor of Dance Magazine, where I believe the radio play was first published.
Yes, Fleetwood. It appeared in the September 1952 issue of Dance Magazine.
And what are some of your other writing chores as far as the magazine is concerned, Walter?
I mostly write on the literary aspects of the dance, and I have a column in the magazine called Quoting, in which appear pieces of poetry and prose by the great writers of world literature.
Relating to the dance?
Definitely relating to the dance. For example, a favorite of mine is this poem by Edna St. Vincent Millay called The Dance. How stealthily their feet upon the floor strike down. These are no spirits, but a band of children surely leaping hand in hand into the air in groups of three and four, wearing their silken rags as if they wore leaves only and light grasses, or a strand of black elusive seaweed oozing sand and running hard as if along the shore. I know how lost forever, and at length how still these lovely tossing limbs shall lie, and the bright laughter and the panting breath. And yet, before such beauty and such strength again, as always when the dance is high, I am rebuked that I believe in death.
Walter, how would you define the relationship between these two arts?
I think I'd best establish the relationship between poetry and the dance first with the words of other poets and great writers. The Greek essayist Plutarch, who lived about 1900 years ago, called dancing silent poetry and added that dancing and poetry have all things in common. The French poet Baudelaire said, dancing is poetry composed with arms and legs. Another great French poet, Mallarmé, wrote that ballet is preeminently theatrical form of poetry or the plastic rendering on the stage of poetry.
When Plutarch speaks of dance and poetry having all things in common, could you give us an idea of what he had in mind?
Almost everyone might have a different notion of what poetry and of what the dance is. But it seems to me they both aim at giving us the perfect feeling of what we may term the illusion of reality, and the transposition of reality onto a higher plane. Dancing is like poetry, a symbolic art, reduced to the most essential, to the illusion rather than to the spelling out of an idea. No doubt, they both take most of their inspiration from the commonplace, from everyday life. But in their expression, they transcend existence. They give us the sublimation of action, emotion, and thought. Both poetry and the dance do not tell us so much as they are suggestive of what they intend to say.
Sometimes you hear people say that they don't understand poetry or that dance doesn't mean a thing to them. And they say it mostly about modern dance and modern poetry.
They have also this in common of which Plutarch certainly didn't think. But this can only happen as long as people are not familiar with either modern poetry or modern dance. It isn't enough to read just one modern poem and throw the book away, or to go to one dance recital and walk out of it. Appreciation of any art form is enhanced when the idiom of expression is more familiar to us. But there's nothing simpler, or let me better say, more basic than a poetic expression or an expressive movement of our present-day emotions and thoughts.
By the way, how is the dancer-poet relation? I assume they inspire one another.
Nowadays, many choreographers or dancers take themes suggested to them by poets in ballet and the modern dance. But they have always done it. Giselle was inspired by a story of Heinrich Heine, and the most famous example is perhaps Nijinsky's ballet The Afternoon of a Faun, based on a poem by Stefan Mallarmé. In our days, Garcia Lorca and Dylan Thomas inspired many dance creations. Some of them have lines of a poem spoken to their dances. Here you have Emily Dickinson's Letter to the World, which became a Martha Graham ballet, or Lorca's poem on the death of a bullfighter is a famous José Limón-Doris Humphrey dance. Only think of Johnny Latouche and his ballet ballads, in which the lyrical lines are sung all the way through the ballets. On the other hand, many poets have been inspired by dancers and by dancing in general. Perhaps we can give our listeners a few examples now.
Here's one that I've always enjoyed, Walter. It's by William Carlos Williams, and it's called The Dance. In Bruegel's great picture, The Kermesse, the dancers go round. They go round and around. The squeal and the blare and the tweedle of bagpipes, a bugle and fiddles tipping their bellies, round as the thick-sided glasses whose wash they impound, their hips and their bellies off balance to turn them. Kicking and rolling about the fairgrounds, swinging their butts, those shanks must be sound to bear up under such rollicking measures, prance as they dance in Bruegel's great picture, The Kermesse.
Let me read now a poem by Louis Untermeyer called Dorothy. This is no child that dances. This is flame. Here, fire has found a habitable frame. What else is that which burns and flies from those enkindled eyes? What is that inner blaze which plays about that lighted face? This thing is fire set free. Fire possesses her. Or rather, she controls its mastery. With every gesture, every rhythmic stride, beat after beat, it follows purring at her side, or licks the shadows of her flashing feet. Around her, everywhere, it coils its twisting threads of yellow hair. Through every vein its bright blood creeps, and its red hands caress as she stands or lifts her boldly when she leaps. Then, as the surge of radiance grows stronger, these two are two no longer, and they merge into a disembodied ecstasy. Free to express some half-forgotten hunger, some half-forbidden urge. What mystery has been at work until it blent one child and that fierce element? Give it no name. It is enough that flesh has danced with flame.
Walter, it was indeed kind of you to stop by this week to discuss poetry and the dance with us. And I'm sure many of our listeners will be looking forward to reading any future articles, columns, or plays signed Walter Sorrell in the pages of Dance Magazine. If you'd like to hurry backstage, Walter, it's almost curtain time for the play. Ladies and gentlemen, we are very fortunate in being able to present, as the major portion of this edition of Anthology, dedicated to the dance, an original verse narrative for radio written by our guest, Walter Sorrell. As I mentioned before, the play has been printed in Dance Magazine, but this will be its first air performance. Playing the title role, we're delighted to have Miss Sydney Smith, who is currently engaged in her own radio series, Byline Sydney Smith, on WRCA in New York. The role of the recording clerk will be played by Howard Rieg. Anthology presents Isadora Duncan, Triumph, Tragedy, Triumph, by Walter Sorrell.
It was the 15th of September, 1927. The headline screamed, "Fatal accident of eminent dancer on Riviera. Isadora Duncan dead. Scarf caught in wheel is said to have strangled her." She still heard the voices of her friends warning her not to drive out in that Bugatti car. But she turned around and said, "I'll do it, even if it's the last thing in the world I should do." She stepped into the car, and it was the last thing in the world she did.
Isadora Duncan, this way, please.
I beg your pardon?
This way, please.
I always thought I moved with such ease, but now I can feel that I hardly touch the ground.
You don't. You are upward bound.
You're right, I am. I always taught my pupils, move up your arms, keep up your head, your soul must float, and your body will seem to leave the world.
You have left the world, Isadora.
I have left. Left the world? Oh, have I?
Step nearer. Yes, that's right, to this desk. You were born in...
San Francisco.
Your age? You don't have to answer.
I don't mind. From here, age seems without time. My heart feels like 20. It beats the rhythm of impetuous drums and hums and melodies of tomorrow. My mind feels like 50. It carries the cross of crushed hopes. It breathes the mellowness of resignation.
Your profession or avocation?